of Humanity at HelloHumanKindness.org.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. What makes a burglar take on the risk of being caught when they break into a home or business? What makes them choose one home or business over another? Are there things you're doing or not doing that are setting you up as a good target for a burglar? Those are the kinds of questions rumbling around in the mind of Dr. Joe Koons, and he decided to get the answers directly from burglars themselves. Dr. Koons is an associate professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at UNC Charlotte. He also served as senior policy analyst at the U.S. Department of Justice in the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services. He interviewed over 400 convicted offenders, providing an unprecedented look into the minds of burglars. And he joins us for the hour to share some of what he discovered. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Also with us for the hour is Dan Kunis, a police officer with CMPD for 24 years, who since 2005 has been working as a burglary detective. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And John Shockness is director of customer care for CPI Security Systems, where he's responsible for quality assurance and central monitoring, among other things. He also worked for a time as a police officer in Raleigh. Welcome.
Good morning.
To you. Morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for being here. I'm sure people will have questions as we go through the program. They can join us at will here. Doctor, I just mentioned that your study has been heralded as unprecedented, and that you say that one way to understand what motivates and deters burglars is to ask them. So you did. Why didn't somebody beat you to the punch?
Well, let's just be clear. I wouldn't characterize it as completely unprecedented. We've certainly had other scholars talking to burglars in the past. I think this one is a bit unique in the sense that we talked to a very large sample of convicted and fairly confirmed burglars across multiple states. And I think the interest here is when you want to learn something about crime, you can talk to a wide variety of people. You can talk to victims. You can talk to the police department. And you can talk to the offenders themselves. And as a scholar, part of my historical interest has been talking to the offenders specifically and understanding from them firsthand what exactly motivates them and what kinds of things importantly deter them and change their behavior.
And the people that you talk to, I would take it they're not in jail because they only did one burglary. They're repeat offenders?
Actually, the folks that I talked to in this study were all in prison, not jail.
Okay.
So these were folks that had been involved in crime for a long time.
So would you call burglary their profession?
That's perhaps an overcharacterization. I think it was a means to an end for them. I think crime is their profession. Typically, and just to distinguish, you've got jails and prisons and jails house folks that have been just recently picked up and are serving short-term sentences. Prison is where you go when you've been involved in crime for a long time or you've done something particularly serious. In this case, the 422 folks that we talked to, males and females across a wide range of prisons, had all been involved in crime and had extensive criminal histories generally, but then also had extensive criminal histories and involvement in burglary specifically.
You spoke to 422 incarcerated burglars. Why would they talk to you? What was their motivation for speaking to you?
Well, it's interesting. I going back to my early days of becoming a scholar, one of the first things I did was interview prostitutes and other female arrestees in a jail setting. Mm-hmm. This was down in Tampa, Florida. And I was a graduate student at the time, and I had access to those folks through the court system, and I had no illusions about the likelihood that they would necessarily talk to me. But when you go into a jail setting, they've got a lot of time in their hands. And prostitutes at that time had no concerns whatsoever talking to me. So typically, I think offenders in correctional settings, knowing that they don't have anything to lose, and the research is designed in a way to help them understand that they don't have to talk. If they do talk, it's not going to have any good or bad consequences for them. So when you go into that kind of setting, they've got time on their hands. They're willing to fill out a survey. In this case, we didn't talk to them directly one-on-one. We gave them a survey and sat with them and helped them fill it out. Mm-hmm. Helped them to fill it out. And most people are willing to share their stories.
This may sound like a bizarre question, but it's going through my head, so I'm going to ask it anyway. Since you spent time talking to prostitutes and you've talked to burglars, is there a commonality that runs through the two? Because, I mean, obviously no one sets out in life to be a prostitute. No one sets out in life to be a burglar. Is there something in common there?
Yeah, I think so. The common thread would be drug motivation, particularly the prostitutes without question. You know, I say this to students when I'm teaching classes and to audiences when I'm talking about this. I agree with you. Nobody decides at some point in their life that I want to become a prostitute. It's not a glorious endeavor. Mm-hmm. They do it because they are either trafficked into the profession or they're trying to support a drug habit. So fast forward to the burglars. It turns out many and most of the burglars have the same concern, male and female burglars in this case. When I interviewed prostitutes in Tampa, it was only females. When we surveyed the burglars here, it was male and female burglars. Right. And it doesn't matter. They both have drug problems that tend to motivate their behavior.
When you think about burglars, the first image that pops into your head is a guy. Could it be those CPI commercials where they're hauling the guy off every time he tries to break into a house? I don't know. But I think it predates those commercials. But you talk to female burglars. Is there a difference by gender in terms of their targets or the methods they use or the reasons for becoming a burglar or their reasons for stealing? I mean, is there a difference at all between men and women?
It turns out there's a number of differences. You know, starting at the basic fundamental level, why are they involved? I think there's commonalities there. Males and females are both involved in burglary because they need to support drug habits. There might be a difference, though, in terms of the type of drug habit. Mm-hmm. It turns out females seem to be more engaged in prescription drug abuse. In fact, will go after prescription drugs when they break in.
So they're going to break into your bathroom.
They're going to head to your bathroom, right, to your medicine closet and see what you have in there. And males, I think, are more street drug oriented and involved in heroin and crack use and things like that. So there's clear differences there. There's differences actually in the type of target that they focus on. Females, in our study at least, broke into houses in the daytime and probably having a pretty good understanding that houses are empty during the day as people are off at work and school and going about their business. Males tended to break into businesses at nighttime. And
because the businesses are empty at night.
Absolutely. Right. So they recognize that the targets are vulnerable at that point.
Let me ask Detective Kunis a question he may not be able to answer officially, who knows. Has it been your experience that the burglars that you deal with when you catch them are going after stuff in people's homes and businesses because they need to support their drug habits?
Well, a lot of the people that we do arrest do have drug problems, and that is a pretty consistent across-the-board thing. It's not only something I've seen personally, but in looking at research, I've seen the same thing. The drugs are one of the main motivators.
Does that make them, in case you happen to be in your home or business when they break in or walk in on them, does that make them more dangerous?
Well, for the most part, they don't want any confrontation. That's the reason why they like to break into things when nobody's around. And if somebody is home, they drop everything and they leave. Mm-hmm. But like with anything else, there's always going to be the one. And that's one of the reasons why I think the state changed their law, because before, when I first joined the police department, you had an obligation to withdraw, where you had to basically cower in your own house before you could use deadly force. Mm-hmm. Now they've changed that recently to where if they break in your house, it's automatically considered a threat to you, fear for your life. And you can use deadly force.
And because many of them are breaking in to support their drug habits, what does that make the war on drugs? Does it make it a – people have said that it's a failure. Is that one of the tools in their toolkit to say that it's a failure, the fact that people are breaking into houses to support their drug habits, that if drugs were legalized and sold over the counter and taxed – that they wouldn't be breaking in as frequently? Could that point be made?
Well, I think what would happen is there's always going to be a black market no matter what, because if you're going to set up a legalized drugs, you're going to have an age, say, 21. Mm-hmm. Well, then if you're 16, 17, 18 and you want the drug, you're going to have to find an illegal means to get to it. Mm-hmm. So you're still going to have a black market. It wouldn't take care of everything. And the other issue would be if you can't afford to buy your legal drugs. You know, if it's being sold at, say, a supermarket or a drugstore, well, I imagine drugstores would be robbed or broken into more often because people would still have the need to get the drug.
And why aren't they? Why aren't drugstores broken? If people are looking for prescription drugs, why aren't they being broken into? Is it because they store those drugs in a hardened safe at night?
Right. It comes down to the target. If you know that your neighbor down the street has prescription drugs mm-hmm. and they're not at home, mm-hmm. it's easier to break into their house than it would be to break into the drugstore, to break into the safe, to get the drugs. It would actually be easier to rob the store while the store's open, but now you're committing a violent crime instead of a property crime, and there's that confrontation.
So, John, I know that you work for CPI, you've worked for other security companies, and you've been a police officer. How do security companies know the profile of burglars? How does that figure into the products that you offer and the way you offer those products to consumers?
Yeah, I mean, we work with residential and commercial. I will tell you from a residential standpoint, what we've really seen quite a bit of, especially over the last 3-4 years, is a push to video and to be able to put video both on outside and inside the home to be able to protect that customer so they can see, hey, what's going on. That used to only take place on a commercial application.
Is that video in real time or is it video that records for identification purposes?
It's actually both. It's actually both. It's on a recording loop, and you mm-hmm. can view it both live, but you can also – what will happen is if there's an incident that takes place, anything that would set off an alarm or anything that would set off motion mm-hmm. within that camera, it's going to save that clip. And so that whether us at CPI or whether the consumer wanted to take a look at it, they'd be able to look at that video.
And do the police then look at that video if there has actually been a break-in?
Absolutely. We've got quite a few instances where we've had that.
Talk to me about that video for a second. I've always wondered about this. When they show video clips of people robbing banks, for instance, on television, they're always horribly blurry and indistinct. We live in a world of high-definition television where high-definition television cameras are cheap today. Why are the videos so crappy looking, and are yours any better looking?
That's a great question. Actually, the camera technology has advanced quite a bit. It's basically been cost in the past. Mm-hmm. The cameras right now that we've got in residential application, they're high-definition cameras. Mm-hmm. It's clear as can be. So I think what you're going to see over the next couple of years is you're going to see more and more of that as it becomes more affordable to customers. But, I mean, right now we've got customers that have high definition.
We'll come back to that. The burglars have to start wearing airbrushed makeup when they're going to break into the houses here. What are some of the factors when you talked to these burglars what was their criteria for picking out homes or businesses to break into or not break into?
Yeah, I think with respect to what they're looking for in terms of easy access, they're looking for homes or businesses that are easy to get in and out of, isolated from other people, not near other businesses or neighbors, and not protected in various ways.
We'll go into greater detail on that when we come out of the break. That's Dr. Joe Coombs, Associate Professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at UNC Charlotte. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Coca-Cola Recycle and Win, an environmental partnership with the City of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County municipalities designed to support and increase recycling in our region. Details at Coke, Recycle and Win. Well, if students have a lot of pressure on them to achieve, their teachers have more. The push on teachers to perform at their best has never been higher. And to help, two area colleges have started a program that strives to cultivate exemplary educators. But who decides who gets into this program and what happens to those who do not? What does the Charlotte Teachers Institute offer that the system does not? Those questions and more, well, hopefully answers to those questions and more, Monday at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, the FBI admits using drones in the U.S. A Congressional Budget Office report says an immigration bill would cut the federal deficit, and the Federal Reserve outlines an end to the stimulus.
That's the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Joe Koons is an associate professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at UNC Charlotte. He conducted a series of interviews with burglars, incarcerated burglars in prisons, 422 of them, to learn about them, to find out why they did what they do and why they chose certain homes or businesses over others to break into. Dan Kunis is a burglary detective with CMPD, and John Shockness is director of customer care at CPI Security, one of the major security companies available to consumers and to businesses in the area. Before we come back to the question I just asked you, off the air in the break, you said you'd like to respond to the question I asked Officer Kunis about the war on drugs and whether or not. Because people are breaking in to support their drug habit, that the war on drugs has worked or not. And you made a distinction off the air between the damage caused by legal versus illegal drugs. Expand on that.
Well, this is a common conversation I have with students at the university and with others when they'll listen to me, which is occasionally. if you look and kind of consider healthcare costs and deaths associated with drugs, and you break it down by legal drugs specifically, tobacco and alcohol, and you compare that to the damage and healthcare costs associated with illicit drugs, including death, it's a staggering difference. So, for example, there are probably 500,000 deaths associated with tobacco and alcohol, compared to maybe 15,000, 20,000 deaths a year compared to all illicit drugs combined.
So why all the focus on illicit drugs?
Well, there's two things that I think about within that context. One is these are dangerous drugs and they're illicit for a reason. Mm-hmm. And we invest resources to try to keep them out of the hands of kids and off the streets because we recognize that if the user base grows, a lot more danger ensues. And so when we think about where we want to devote resources for certain drugs that are particularly dangerous, it makes sense to devote those resources toward prevention and toward enforcement.
And if we have far more deaths from legal drugs, tobacco, alcohol, et cetera, than we do from illicit drugs, would you say that more people who are breaking into homes are breaking into homes to support that habit? You said that women break in to get to prescription drugs. You didn't say that men did. They break in to get merchandise.
That's my thinking.
But when they turn that merchandise into cash, the men, what are they buying with it? Are they buying cocaine or are they buying not Tylenol, but oxycodone?
Let me clarify. The men are breaking in to get cash primarily. Mm-hmm. That's their number one option, and anything that they can transfer quickly into cash. But they'll take drugs as well. The motivations behind the break-in, though, for both males and females are substance abuse problems.
So let's go back to the question I asked just before the break, and you didn't really have enough time to get into it because we were sneaking up to it quickly. What are the factors? What's the criteria that burglars use to choose your home or business over another home or business?
Well, we asked a wide variety of questions about things that they might consider as they contemplate whether or not to enter a home or a business. Some external indicators like is the mailbox full? Are there newspapers lying around? Are there cars out of the driveway? Are, you know, windows and doors open? Are vulnerable areas, of course. Garage doors open, for that matter, create quick opportunities for burglaries. We asked them about alarms, surveillance cameras that might be in place, even alarm signs. Dogs inside the house, people inside the house, even lights and noise are indicators that someone is there. And I agree with Detective Kunis. Most burglars don't want to have a confrontation. They want to come in, take what they can get, and get out quickly. So if there's indicators of presence of people, animals, or hardened targets, as we like to say, then they're going to find somewhere else to go.
Yeah, the study was partially funded. Your study was partially funded by the Alarm Industry Research and Educational Foundation and the Electronic Security Association, which is the largest trade association, I believe, for the electronic security industry. And one of your findings, and you just mentioned this, was that burglars look for alarm signs in the yard and signs of alarm systems being installed when they decide whether or not to hit a home or business. So I have to ask, and I've always wondered about this, which is the greater deterrent, the sign in the yard or having the system itself? Can we just go to CPI and buy a sign?
I don't want to speak for CPI on that, and I think it would not be helpful to their business to say that's the case.
They could charge a lot of money for the sign.
Yeah, you can make a little side business on signs. But as it turns out, they are looking for the alarms themselves, and the alarm presence, either seeing an alarm or seeing a camera, mm-hmm. is one of the strongest deterrents for a burglar. And many, many times if they see that, detect it somehow, they're going to go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I think it's a real validation for the usefulness of alarms in society. Now, there's a wide range of things to consider within that context, but at least within this study, talking to this group of 422 burglars, most of them, if they see the alarm, they're going to pick another home.
So how do they see the alarm? A lot of alarm companies make a big deal out of, particularly if they're installing a new construction, out of not showing any signs that the doors and windows are monitored, but they are. So how does a burglar know by looking at the door or window that if I open this window or door, it's going to set off an alarm?
Well, you mentioned yard signs, which we absolutely utilize, but we also utilize window stickers and door stickers so that you can place throughout there. We believe in advertising. If we're protecting a home, hey, put as much out there so that we don't want somebody to try to get in and find out there's an alarm. And obviously now with a lot more cameras that are posted outside, it's real obvious very quickly that there's cameras there as well.
Right.
But the window stickers, the yard sign, when you put all that together, it's pretty quick. And they'll also, if they look into the home, a lot of times they'll be able to see a motion detector. So if they go up to a window and they look in there, they're going to see a motion detector as well.
Put your headphones on. We'll take a very quick call here from Spencer in Charlotte, who has an interesting question as well. Spencer, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. How effective is an NRA sticker on each door and window?
An NRA sticker.
Yes.
You know what? That's a great question. It's a tough one, I think. I will relate it to one small segment of our study, and that had to do with we asked them what kinds of things they looked for when they went into a house, and of the 422 burglars, only one said they were looking for guns. So they were breaking into the home to find a gun that they could either use in a crime or sell later. Now, we didn't ask about the NRA signs, and I would probably caution us all to think very carefully about the nature of this sample. This is a older incarcerated sample. So it doesn't suggest that younger offenders won't break into homes and look for guns.
I think maybe the question has to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer, with if you put an NRA sign on your window or door that you're saying, come in here uninvited, I'll use my firearm.
Yes.
Is that what your question is, Spencer?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yes. And so I can't answer the question with the data I have. Based on what I think how a burglar would think about this, they would probably go somewhere else. That's an indicator that the risk for them is elevated if you have that kind of an indication on your door.
Spencer, thank you for your call. Officer, you say that there is one burglary every 14.6 seconds in the country, and that residential burglaries constitute 73.9% of all burglaries. How does that compare to what happens in Charlotte-Mecklenburg?
Charlotte-Mecklenburg is pretty much just like the national average. Granted, we don't have a break-in every 15 seconds, but we still have about 25, 26 break-ins that were reported every day. Mm-hmm. So burglary is a serious problem in Charlotte, and it makes up almost a quarter of all the Part 1 offenses.
Part 1 means what?
basically, the FBI puts out every year the uniform or the uniform crime reporting. It's a way of being able to look at how serious crime is throughout the country. And the big ones are murder, rape, robbery, aggravated assault. Then there's burglary, larceny, larceny of vehicle, and arson. And that's what's considered Part 1 offenses. Mm. Those are the ones that police departments are really grilled on to see how well they're doing in keeping the community safe.
You mentioned larceny and burglary. There are also other categories that the police use, like theft and robbery. And I'm just curious as to – they're all the same thing to me. So what's the difference between larceny, burglary, theft, and robbery?
Okay. Larceny and theft are the same. But the big distinction that people always say is my house got robbed. Mm-hmm. The house isn't robbed. Robbery is a crime against person. So basically, if property is taken from you, whether through use of force, intimidation, or use of a weapon, that would be considered a robbery because it came from your person. Mm-hmm. While burglary, a business, some kind of structure.
A car?
LFA, or larceny from vehicle, that would be considered a larceny.
Okay.
It has to be a structure. It has to be a building to be a burglar.
And what is theft?
Theft is a larceny, where basically something was stolen from you, such as a bicycle from the front yard.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't in the house?
It wasn't in the house.
And it wasn't from your person? It
wasn't from your person.
So that's the difference. Are robberies up, down, static in this region?
Well, are you talking about robberies or burglaries?
Excuse me, burglaries. Yeah.
Burglaries, it sort of peaked in 2006, and the department actually put a lot of resources into play in 2006 because burglary was the worst problem we had going on.
Wow.
Murders were down, robberies were down, all the violent crime was down. But burglary was actually driving our crime numbers that year. So we dedicated more detectives. It got a lot of attention by our command staff. We started processing DNA evidence and really pushing that. And since that point, we've actually seen a decrease every year since then, including I was going to say, including last year, in which there was a slight increase in our Part 1 offenses, except burglary was actually down 9%.
And so you're attributing that to increased vigilance on the part and increased detective work on the part of the police department?
Well, that's the one question I wish I could find out.
You just don't know the answer yet.
I don't know the answer.
Could it be because of the proliferation of alarm companies and alarm systems? I mean, you know, I grew up in the dark ages when nobody had an alarm and nobody locked their door.
Right.
And suddenly we started locking our doors. And then I guess it was in the 80s, we were being told we had to have alarm systems. And you kind of felt like you did. And then I had a burglary and I got an alarm system from these people over here. and haven't had one since. Knock on Formica. How much of it has to do with the fact that burglars don't want to deal with alarm systems and homes that are securitized?
Well, and that's an important thing, whether it's an alarm system, deadbolt locks. If you're making the target harder to get into, we have a thing called CEPTED, which is crime prevention through mm-hmm. environmental design, where lighting, making sure your grass is cut, put maybe some holly bushes or something underneath your windows. Those type
so it's
things.
Prickly?
Prickly.
Mm-hmm.
Things that will keep people from breaking in. What they're looking for, you go down any neighborhood, you have a choice of any house. So the harder you make your house, chances are they'll move on to the next one.
And there are more residential than business burglaries. Is that right? Because there are more houses than businesses, because the stuff inside the house is more easily fenced than the stuff in businesses, because the houses are softer as opposed to businesses, which are hardened to that kind of thing because they have safes? And what's the reason for that?
Well, you pretty much hit on all of it.
Okay.
Because houses are not as secure as businesses are. Businesses, they have locks, they have cameras, they have alarms.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you break in, what are you going to steal? If you're going for money, that's in a safe. So that's all the secure things that deter people from going into businesses.
I would turn to John Shockness with CPI and say, although not every home has an alarm system, I'm sure that you would encourage them to do so, that they should have one. But I won't ask you that question because I know you're going to say that. But why do most people get a system if it's their first system? What provokes them to do that?
There's several factors that you'll see. One is they've moved into a new area, so they're unfamiliar with it. Mm-hmm. Certainly one is they've had an incident, much like yourself, where they've been burglarized or they know somebody that's been burglarized, mm-hmm. Or they've got some concerns over it. What we're seeing now is a lot more people, though, that because technology's changed and now we can we're more into the home as far as lighting. We're in the home with thermostats. We're in the home with door lock controls, that there's more of a home automation mm-hmm. feel to it as well. Mm-hmm. So now people are wanting more of the technology. And with that, you're getting the alarm systems
They can look at their house on their iPhone. They can turn lights on and off. They forgot to lock the door. They can lock the door remotely.
Correct.
That's pretty cool stuff, actually. I want to go through some stats that you put in your study, Doctor. 83% of your 422 burglars told you that they would try to determine if an alarm was present before attempting a burglary. And then 60% said they would seek an alternative target if they determined there was a system in use. And I'm curious as to why only 83% would check for an alarm, and while a full 40% would proceed with the burglary in the face of the alarm.
These are good questions. There's a couple things I think about. That 17% may just be an impulsive group, and they're not thinking about the consequences of their actions. They're not considering the likelihood of apprehension. They are motivated to engage in a burglary, and off they go.
Are they high? Are they desperate?
Often. Often. In fact, I think 73% of the burglars said that they were under the influence of drugs or alcohol while mm-hmm. burglarizing at some point in their life. So it tells you, and it gives us a concern, that when they do enter your home, there's a good chance that some of them are not in a sober condition.
Mm.
And the other part is you've got a group out there that are meticulous, thoughtful, planning, sophisticated, professional, plan on the alarm being in place, and think that they have the ability to disarm it or disable it, or recognize that if it goes off, they've still got a time frame within which they can get in and get out before somebody shows up.
What is that time frame? How fast do the police get there when an alarm goes off?
Well, it like everything else, it varies. But rule of thumb, 5 to 10 minutes.
You can do a lot of damage in 5 to 10 minutes,
sure,
can't
right.
you? Yeah, so does that negate the effectiveness of security, having security?
No, the biggest thing is you're reducing the opportunity that they can steal things.
Mm-hmm.
If there was no alarm, they would have all day to steal something. Now they only have a few minutes.
We're going to talk about some of the things that they go after and some of the things that you do that make your house attractive and easy when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Creative Loafing's second annual Art and Music Festival, Saturday, July 20th, noon to 5 at NC Music Factory. Artists, musicians, family-friendly, open to all, clclt.com/CLEvents. The FBI admits using drones in the United States. A Congressional Budget Office report says an immigration bill would cut the federal deficit, and the Federal Reserve outlines an end to its stimulus. Diane Rehm and a panel of journalists will get together to talk about the week's top national news stories at 10 o'clock this morning. And in the 11 o'clock hour, they'll take on the international stories of the week. You're invited to join them, as you are us, at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. And we are coming right back to discover more about the minds of burglars.
thing about breaking up on an island is that...
The Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live.
You can't leave. There's nowhere to go.
Old-fashioned storytelling about modern life, next time on the Moth Radio Hour. From the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Hope you'll join us later tonight. It starts at 9 at 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're peering into the minds of burglars here with a guy who knows it well because he talked to 422 of them, Dr. Joe Koons, associate professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at UNC Charlotte. Also with us, Dan Kunis, a burglary detective for years now at CMPD, and John Shockness, who is a director of customer care at CPI Security and a former police officer himself. We talked about how there is this 5 to 10 minute response time on the part of a police officer being able to get to your home if an alarm system goes off. But you made a good point off the air, John, and that is that more and more people are going to these camera-based security systems. So even though the police may not arrive the instant the house is broken into, you now have a picture.
That's exactly what's happened. So we've not only do we have the picture, but we've got something we can give to the police department. And what we've seen is a lot more opportunities for apprehension of these individuals. I don't want to speak for the police department, but I think they'll tell you is a lot of times time is of the essence. So the quicker they can get that information, the quicker they can act on it.
What do you do with these pictures? Would you match them against mugshots, or what do you do?
Well, there's a few things.
I mean, if you rob a bank, it's going to be on the television news.
And we've actually put pictures of burglars on the TV news.
Really?
Yes. We also email it out to other officers to see if they recognize them. But really, one thing that John was talking about that was important was they actually had some incidents where they were able to get the pictures to the officers at the scene. The officers at the scene were actually able to see the individual wearing the exact same clothes nearby and make arrests. So
in some cases, the customer recognizes the person that's burglarized them. And we've had incidents where they've said, hey, that's my neighbor, or hey, I've seen that guy around. And that's helped the police department as well. Where in the past, if they had no camera, you'd have no idea.
What are they looking for? From your experience as a police officer who goes in and investigates these crimes, what are they looking for? What have they taken?
Well, cash, guns, jewelry, video game systems, flat screen TVs, things that are easy to take and then really sell on the street.
It's hard to walk out of a house unnoticed with a 55-inch flat screen television.
Right.
How do they get out of the house?
Well, that's when you pretty much know they're either a next-door neighbor or they have some type of vehicle to put it in. We can determine some break-ins, like if it was a kid or somebody who might have a vehicle, just by what was taken. Kids normally have backpacks, and in the backpacks is where they put the video game systems, things that they can easily carry and walk out and walk through the neighborhood.
You didn't mention computers. Should you have?
Well, laptops. Laptops are it. The old desktop, not so much, because you got to take it apart and the tower and all that. But laptops are definitely.
And once these guys, and men and women, because they're men and women who do this, once they walk off with your stuff, how do they turn it into cash? What do they do with it?
Well, everybody thinks pawn shops are the number one place, but crooks really don't like pawn shops, especially in Charlotte, because they have to give their ID. Uh-huh. And not only do they have to give their ID, they have to put their fingerprints on the pawn tickets. So that leads to positive identification. So they really don't like that much. But selling it on the street is the number one thing. And whether it's just going around the neighborhood trying to sell it to folks or
have a yard sale?
Well, I actually heard of somebody who did that. But Craigslist is another big thing. We have criminals who like to break in. They take the stuff, post on Craigslist, and sell it that way.
Do they then sell it, know that you bought it, and break into your house and take it back? once your house is broken into, and I know – you have a tough job, but what's the likelihood of your being able to apprehend without, in the absence of pictures and any fingerprints that they may have left behind on the house? What's the likelihood of either apprehending the person who broke in or getting the merchandise back?
Well, the merchandise is usually the hardest thing because most folks don't have serial numbers. And serial numbers are the main backbone of being able to trace property. So most of the time, we don't have the luxury of having that.
Mm-hmm.
But the average clearance for a break-in nationwide, and Charlotte's no different, right around 10% is about the average.
Wow. So not only do you feel violated, because I've had this happen, you feel violated because somebody's been in your house unbeknownst to you and rummaging through your stuff.
Right.
The chances of you getting it back, there's not a lot of chance of justice.
Right.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things that I did, I actually recently completed my thesis, and my whole topic was burglary clearance to see basically what works, what helps us clear. And one of the biggest things that we found is neighbors, witnesses.
Mm.
That was by far the number one thing that we, if we had it, we could clear the case. But unfortunately, in looking at the data, it happens about 10% of the time people actually participate.
You're making these cameras look better and better. I mean, you really are. According to the criminals you spoke to, Doctor, what was their favorite point of entry?
An open door or an open window.
So they try the doors and windows first?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then many people either leave them open entirely or leave them unlocked, and it makes it easy for them. And then if they couldn't get in to that way because it's open, then they brought basic tools, a screwdriver, crowbar.
There's a lot of glass in modern houses because people like all the light coming in, particularly houses built in the 80s and 90s. Do they just break the windows?
I didn't ask that question specifically, but they force their way in. So, yes, I would say they're probably breaking windows.
What do you find? And you've been a police officer too, John. Yeah. So what do you find they do?
Well, for the most part, they want to get in with the least amount of effort. So if they can find an open window, open door, or if they can easily pry it open, they would rather do that because if they break the glass, there's always a chance they could cut themselves. So
and that would leave?
That would leave DNA evidence. Mm-hmm. So they still break windows, but it's not the number one method of getting in.
Now,
they'd rather kick open a door.
Your study revealed that if they hear noise in the house, whether it's a dog or voices or music playing, then they would rather avoid it.
Yes.
I know that in the CPI commercials, and I'm going to come back to you because you have these commercials, you have this voice, this disembodied voice that comes on after the house is broken into that says, "This is CPI security, identify yourself."
Correct.
Have you found that to be effective, that this disembodied voice is coming out of a speaker talking to somebody, and when that goes off, they know, something has – the perimeter has been breached.
Correct.
Which causes you to come on the speaker and
Correct.
Talk. While that person is talking and waiting for a response, are they already dispatching police?
That's exactly what's happening. I mean, there's a couple things that's taking place. One is as soon as the house has been breached, mm-hmm. depending on if there's if it's through a window or a door that's been blasted open, the alarm is going off. So you've got a loud noise that's taken place. Then somebody is coming over, but not only are they coming over and challenging whoever that may be, we're also listening in, so we're able to give any of that information part. And if we throw that third aspect in, if we've got a camera, we're also looking at a camera to see what's taking place during there.
How do we know you're not listening in when we're home?
Can't do it. We can only do it when the
How do
alarm
we know
system.
That?
It's a great question. Customers can actually see any time we access their system. Uh-huh. So when we access it during alarm, they can actually see. Oh,
how do we know that?
Through their iPhone. So they're going to get a notification that hey, their system's been that somebody's logged in there. So they'll know whether
Same thing
they've
with
logged
the cameras.
In.
How do we know the cameras aren't on?
Same thing. If they log
how
in
How do
themselves,
we know that?
Because they'll get a message.
Now, how do we know that?
How do you know that you get a message?
No. How do we know that you because you it's all software and you can tell software to do almost anything. How do we know that you can't eavesdrop?
You know, with best way I can tell you is that they can see whenever they themselves look at it. So they've got a recording of that. And the same thing that will happen if we do that. We also have them sign documents that say, hey, if we have access. If they choose not to let us look at it, mm-hmm. we have zero access. They actually have to give us permission and give us access. And they can actually change a password where we have no access to it at all if they choose. We also have strict instructions with any of our staff, and actually we've got a strict policy of termination if anybody were to do that without.
In your experience, you're not the only company that does this, that has this back to – maybe you are the only company that does this back and forth communication when the perimeter's been breached and you can actually listen in to the burglar and you can talk to the burglar. I mean
– Yeah. To my knowledge, we're the only ones that are live viewing video.
So when that happens, what is the response of the burglar? Do you get a response or do they just clam up and get out?
A lot of times it can vary. Sometimes you'll hear nothing, but you'll hear shuffling. You'll hear some stuff going on.
Yeah.
If you are looking at the video, you can see them quickly leave, kind of to these gentlemen's points. They're not going to stay very long regardless when they hear the alarm. The big difference –
Do you find that's more effective than a siren going off?
What's that?
The fact that somebody's talking from the security company to the house.
I think so for one big reason. They know that it's not just a local system.
Right.
Because if you just have the siren going off and you have nobody coming over, there's a chance that it's not going anywhere.
Okay. In your conversations, is there a pattern that burglars use to go through the house, depending upon whether they're male or female, whether they're looking for drugs or things that they can fence for cash? Is there a pattern that they use that we can thwart?
It's a great question, and I've had the question before, and I don't have that answer. We didn't ask them specifically what they did as they entered the home and where they went and how they proceeded throughout the house and what steps they took. I think it's a great follow-up study, and mm-hmm. it's probably something we'll take a look at at another time.
Do you have an answer to that from your experience as a police officer or detective?
Well, master bedrooms, that's where people would normally have jewelry, cash, or a firearm. Living rooms, that's where you have your big flat-screen TVs, video game systems. Those are definitely two of the biggest places that they're going to search.
So if you have cash or jewelry, not costume jewelry, but valuable jewelry, and you don't have a safe, where should you put it to thwart the burglar? In the freezer?
Well, they think of that too. and that's the unfortunate part. You really have to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter how creative you are, the criminals are just as creative. So,
and I read a study yesterday that said one way to thwart these people is to alter the internal layout of your property. In other words, every house kind of is laid out the same way because that's what we want as consumers. We expect the family room to be connected to the kitchen, et cetera, and the master bedroom is off in a corner by itself, et cetera, et cetera. But if we lay the house out differently, they're disoriented. It takes them a while to figure – it gives you more time to get them because it's taking them more time to get to your stuff, right?
Yeah, I think that would work for the spur-of-the-moment burglar who hasn't been – thoughtful and planning ahead of time.
And are most of them thoughtful and planning ahead?
Most are not.
Okay.
Most are just going about and they see an opportunity and they jump in.
Let me get through a couple of questions here from people who have emailed. Daniel says, I've been living in my new house and knock on wood, no crime. However, I've noticed that my new neighbor has installed a surveillance camera above her side door that points directly at my porch. My question is related to privacy. What rights do neighbors have when another neighbor puts up a camera that potentially robs another neighbor's privacy?
Dan, this is a tough one.
Yeah. The best thing is I would talk to them. Because if it were a government agency, you know, that would violate some constitutional things. But mm-hmm. being a person,
well, that's questionable.
That's true too. But what I would do is bring it up to the homeowners association. They actually have a lot more power than any police agency would.
Dick and Matthews emails, please ask your guests to comment on door jam armor. The Matthews police suggest this option some time ago. It fortifies the jam lock and hinges.
That is a good thing because kicking doors is a popular method. And if you look online, there's actually some demonstrations of how effective it is. Because basically it just goes to the the door knob, and it's a bar that goes down to the ground, and it will fortify, especially back doors.
Where does burglary most often occur, in affluent neighborhoods or less affluent neighborhoods in Charlotte?
Well, it really occurs in your less affluent, only because there's less security measures.
Okay.
And it's all about opportunity.
Short on time, but we have a phone call that I won't take, but I'll ask the question. Ann wants to know how to protect your home if it's on the market, if it's being sold. When realtors have that lockbox on the door, do you know who's coming and going?
You don't know who's coming or going. The best thing I would say is keep the electricity on and get an alarm system. And
but then you have to give the code out to the realtor so that they can get in and out.
But you can also get certain codes.
Just for them.
Just for them, and they can have temporary codes. So there are alarm suggestions and technology where you can keep that property secure and still know who's coming.
Jode on Facebook wants to know, how often does a photo result in an arrest?
Photos are it all depends on the quality. This week had an ABC store that was broken into, and the quality of that video was good enough for me to look at the picture and look at the mugshot and be able to say, yes, that's the same person.
And depending upon light levels at night and things like that, are the quality of the photos that most alarm companies provide homeowners pretty doggone good?
Again, the newer stuff is very good.
That's John Schockness, Director of Customer Care at CPI Security. Dan Kunis is a burglary detective for CMPD. And Joe